You're now listening to The Brian Callen Show with your host, Brian Callen.
All right, everybody. This is The Brian Callen Hunter Mott Show. I really don't like saying, I wish we had a better name for this show, man.
Well,
making smart people accessible. This is making smart people. This is the place where you can talk to smart people. Smarter than us, ladies and gentlemen.
The IQ Haha Show.
It's the IQ Haha Show. Here we are. It's true, man. I never thought that this podcast has just become like sort of a place where I come and get to talk to really smart people for an hour.
Yeah, it's so fun.
Yeah.
I think that's so much what I think my role is that, you know, Brian, you're too lazy to book these people.
I'm just too lazy. Not only am I too lazy, I don't know these people. Like, you come up with these great names, and I'm like, what the, you know. I did come up with Ben Goldacre, who just blew us off, unfortunately.
Brian, how does it feel to be stood up instead of by, you know, a really hot chick, by a really smart
story
person?
Of my life. I know. I'm getting blown off by nerds. I do well with the ladies, but nerds seem to, and rightly
just,
so.
No, you just haven't figured out what your mojo is. You know what I mean? It's all probably the same thing.
I just think it's funny that I'm so, you know, you go from when you're a young man, I was always impressed with like really great athletes or Navy SEALs or... And now when I read a book like by this guy, Ben Goldacre, Dr. Ben Goldacre, who wrote a book called Bad Science, another book called Bad Pharma, which kind of basically talks about how drug companies mislead doctors and harm patients. Those are my new heroes. Mm-hmm. Those nerds are the people I want to talk to. And if you want to call nerds the worst word, but, you know, the guys who spend, you know, painstaking hours really figuring out who the bad guy is. And usually it's not a bad guy. Usually it's systemic. Usually it's a problem with a mindset, how we are thinking. You know, Putin is not the problem with Russia. It's the Russian mindset.
Mm-hmm.
It's what people believe is possible. We keep going back to the things that you've kind of dedicated a large part of your life to, which is mindset, which is your beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is possible, and what have you been told, and are you accepting what you've been told?
And to bear in mind that everything that you believe based on your experience is rational. If you've been through the last 2,000 years of Russian history, like, you really have no basis for thinking that things could be different.
Absolutely.
Or better.
Well, there's no reason to smile. You know, one of the things they say when you go to Russia is nobody smiles. Yeah. Take a look at just their recent history.
Yeah.
World War I and II were fought on their backs.
That's the thing. The Russian war machine was the willingness of Stalin to kill more of his own people than Germans.
Yeah, real sweetheart.
You know?
That's exactly right.
I mean, that's always the thing that's most amazing is when you look at World War II casualties and you're like, Americans, 500,000. Yeah. British, okay. And then you get to Russian, it's 20 million.
Yeah, 20 million people.
20 million people.
And people, it's hard to even imagine what that is. That's 200 stadium fulls of people.
Also, what it does to a society. I mean, when I took Russian in college, you know, my Russian teacher used to talk about when you take out such a large chunk of men from the society, what that does to relationships, what that does to dating, because men become such a scarce commodity that they can just be the biggest assholes possible. And women talk about it. And there was a saying that she used to say in Russia, you know, which was ni beat, ni pete, which is he doesn't beat you, he doesn't drink. What do you have to complain about?
Wow.
As if, like, that's the high watermark of what a man can be.
God damn it. Because I remember going there in 1985, and one of the things I noticed, and they said to look for it, is you didn't see any old men.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. You didn't see old men. They'd all been killed. And it's no wonder that, you know, you had a group of people, and by the way, it was communist, so there were no advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that going from Russia to Hong Kong, I remember going from Russia to a capitalist sort of port and seeing how colorful things were, how good the food was and the restaurants, and just sort of like what free enterprise does versus communism, which was people who looked like me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who are white. It wasn't. I'd been all over the world, and for the most part, you go to Africa, you go to places like that. And one of the things that's interesting is that people are very, very poor, but they look different than you if you're a white person. They look different. They're black or they're Asian or whatever they are. And so there is an emotional distance that human beings, because we're tribal, will say. You know, you go, oh, they're dark, and so you know they're African, and so, well, it's just different. I can't relate to that as closely as I can when I see a group of people that look like they're from Toledo you know, but they're eating, they're living on cabbage and bread, and they don't smile, and they basically can't say anything about their government, et cetera, et cetera. That was the, that was a huge wake up call.
Mm-hmm.
That that, you know, it just made me feel very, very lucky. And again, you know, one of the things I had to contend with as a kid was, and one of the things that I think I try to do in this podcast is, as a kid, I was like, why did I get lucky? The math fell in my favor. I didn't do anything to deserve this. And well, I still haven't yet. And so at least with this podcast, we're able to bring about, you know, perspectives, people who like Ben Goldacre and people like that who have perspective, who spent a long time earning their point of view. They have earned the right to write a book.
Well, and I mean, I think what you're saying, I mean, firstly, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's such a, there was a great, great commencement speech that was given at, I can't remember if it was the Citadel or West Point. And it was all about the importance of books. Because an article is, you know, hours of thought that have been concentrated into a piece. A book is a decade's worth of thought.
It's a decade.
Often much, much more. I mean, you remember when we talked to Jared Diamond and we asked him, how long have you been working on Guns, Germs, and Steel? And he was like, well,
20 years.
Yeah, exactly.
A lifetime.
Yeah, and that's what's so cool is you get to, I mean, it's a book is distilled thought. It's pure, refined, unadulterated thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
or it is adulterated, in fact, isn't
well,
it?
Well, true, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean, though. That is the beauty of and the difference between reading an article on the internet and actually taking the time to read a whole book. Because a book is an argument. And if you read a book like Bad Science or Bad Pharma or any of the books we talk about, you know, these are people or merchants of doubt. You know, you may disagree. It may be expose. It may have its caveats where, you well, this is true or this is not true. But you're going to get something out of it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's going to give you a very different, it's given me a very different perspective. I was already cynical about the pharmacology, you know, industry. But this is really, it really is a fair expose, I think. He's a doctor.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he knows how drugs are prescribed, and he knows how how pharmaceutical companies influence doctors, and not only influence doctors, but control the entire debate. They are the ones who show you what this drug does. They are the ones who get to choose what you see. If a drug doesn't come across as flattering in a drug trial, guess what? They are legally allowed to bury it. And if 40 trials show that the drug doesn't work so well, but 3 do, you see the 3 that do. And that's a problem.
Well, and I mean, that's the thing is, you know, so much of what capitalism rests on is information.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the market can only work if people have good information. That's why, you know, the SEC makes sure that, you know, companies have to report what's going on with their financials. You know, if they're not honestly reporting, then that's a real problem. And I think the two places that are the most screwed up in our society are the most screwed up because the public is not, they're not smart shoppers about that. And that's health and education. Like, people just sort of trust doctors and they trust teachers. And, you know, or they trust that if they're paying, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to a university with a fancy name and big brown red buildings, you know, that they're getting their money's worth. And that's you have to make sure that you're a smart shopper in every area, and especially in education and health.
Yeah. Yeah. And that starts with having but being given the right information.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, when you're sick, you go to your doctor and you assume that the drugs that you are being prescribed have been tested against drugs that don't work, drugs that are not as good, and you're getting the best available medicine there is. And that's not true.
And you may be getting the best available medicine that there is, but the problem is then we find out, whoops, there are side effects, you know?
Well, that's what he does really well in the book of how new drugs come to market and the painstaking testing that has to go on.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty amazing.
Well, I would ask, you know, because sometimes you refer to yourself as a libertarian, right? One of the big libertarian arguments that's made about pharmaceuticals is that there are too many restrictions. And the problem is that...
Well, it bars entry. It bars a... There's been no... I think the 1970 or something, I mean, even before that, there has been no entry into the marketplace. There's been no new company willing to put the kind of money it takes into getting a new drug onto market. It's so expensive. You have to be Pfizer. You have to be Smith, Klein, mm-hmm. Beecham and stuff, because it costs you $1 billion to get a drug on market. Because the FDA essentially will say, you know, look, we got to run all these tests and we have to protect the public. But there are a great deal of regulation.
Yeah,
I don't know the answer on that front. I do think that there are a lot of people that would be willing. There are people out there who work independently looking to sell their molecule, mm-hmm. their chemicals to a drug company, which is the other thing that I was interesting. I think we are still in many ways, and you're a biochem major, which it would surprise me. We are, no, I mean, about how drugs are, basically, you sit in a lab, you come up with a molecule, which mm-hmm. is a chemical, and it's a cluster of atoms,
yeah.
or whatever, and you then introduce it to a petri dish, and you see if it actually stops or has an effect on said virus, said bacteria, said pathogen.
Science is based on accidents. That's how we find things out.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, sure. Fleming accidentally leaves one of his, you know, dishes exposed, and then he finds that the, you know, the bacteria.
His mucus, he had a cold, and he dripped into the dish. And
yeah, and so he finds out that, you know, this fungus has something which allows it to fight bacteria, and so and that from there, penicillin and antibiotics are born. So, you know, accidents are a big part of it, and so that drug discovery relies on drug companies trying things out and seeing what works. I mean, that's just part of the process. But I think it is important to realize that it's not, I think so often if you don't understand how drug discovery works, you're under the illusion that these very smart, very well-trained, very educated people have sat there and have said, ah, we understand the disease. It happens by ABC.
Right.
Therefore, if we do D, then that will, you know, cure the disease. No. I mean, Viagra started off.
That's not how it happens. Viagra was a blood pressure medicine.
Yeah, exactly. It was a blood pressure medicine, and then as they're trying to like market it as a blood pressure medicine, they notice that everybody has boners. And so what happens is they're like, "Oh, let's make this boner medication."
You call it a boner. I call it the truth. Yeah.
Brian, the basis of your cult.
Well, Viagra's actually done gone a ways to preserve like the rhinoceros and things and tigers, because in Asia, there's all this bullshit superstition about how gallbladder from a bear or, you know, or tiger claw or, you know, rhinoceros horn is an aphrodisiac. And all of a sudden, a pill, you know, comes along and people are like, wait a minute, this actually is better than rhinoceros horn because it's been tested. And there's a good side to pharmacology. It saves lives. I mean, there are a lot of drugs that do work and there are a lot of drugs that, you know, we need and people need. But man, I'll tell you, it's amazing how it's just amazing to me, you know, how many don't work and how.
Well,
and we're also kind of stuck in, and it's changing, of course, but there's a new frontier to medicine, which is really changing the entire paradigm of how we think.
Mm-hmm.
The body is a conduit for information. The body is just a very elaborate computer. So we're going to learn how to download information from the brain. We're going to figure out a way. They're re-engineering, they're reverse engineering the brain. And he said, all these diseases, the answer lies in figuring out how the brain works. And cancer, for example, if the body is creating irregular cell division, and it becomes sort of a tumor or a wound that won't heal. Well, there's a way, we think, to shut that. The brain is sending those messages. The brain is saying, hey, create more colon cells when you don't need them. That mechanism can shut to turn back on, the mechanism you use when you were in the womb to produce cells and things. There's this idea that, you know, if we can kind of scramble that code, get into the brain and tell the brain to stop producing those cells, we can shut that signal off. That's and that kind of thinking is where we have to go. That sometimes in life you need to change the entire, just the way you think about a problem, right?
Yeah, for sure. And so much of that is about constantly figuring out. I mean, that's what science is. All it is you have a model of the world and you keep on refining that model. You know, and that's when we had John Gerchy on to talk about human evolution, that's the point. You know, we have Darwin had a particular model. He thought, oh, probably, you know, what happened was is that the brain got big first and then the face changed. And then we find out, oh, that model's wrong. Actually, the face changed and then the brain got big. But, you know, there's along the way, science has to be wrong. The difference is that in pharmacology, when science is wrong, people are born with birth defects or they die.
Yeah.
You know, and that's a really expensive, unpleasant price to pay.
Yeah.
For being
well,
wrong.
Well, why is every scientist we ever talk to, why do they all believe so strongly in evolution?
Well, that's the thing is that when you, it's what fits the data. What is the, you know, it goes back to Occam's razor. What is the simplest possible explanation and what is the predictive explanation? You know, because the thing that I always think about is the cargo cults in Papua New Guinea, right? Because if you look at from that story, right, they have, their worldview makes total internal sense. But it fails because they think that if they flap their lips and build a giant twig airplane that it will fly. And it doesn't.
And well, depends on how high you are. I did mushrooms once. But keep going.
But the point is that's the thing clearly they have this theory, but clearly it fails because
it's the wrong association, right?
Yeah.
You're associating one thing with another.
Yeah. But because the twig airplane doesn't take off, at a certain point you have to face that data and say, okay, that doesn't work.
Right.
The problem is that happens with every single religious system. You know, if you say, oh, the world was created in 7 days, well, it's like, okay, radio dating says that these rocks are 4.5 billion years old, which fits with this other stuff that we know about radiation, which fits with this and this and this and this and this and this.
It's a piece of a puzzle, and it does and it does fit.
That's right. And everything ultimately fits. And, you know, that's the thing is that science is internally consistent. And when we find out that something doesn't fit, well, then the science changes. And
I always get a kick out of most of us are not scientifically minded. I mean, most of us are, you know, from the pills we take in the morning to make us healthier, we don't know whether that works or not. We've not seen any data. If you hear people all the time say, green tea is really good for you, how do you know that? You've heard that. I've heard it. I drank green tea this morning.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know what that means.
Hand washing is the biggest example of that. It's a ritual we do after, you know, the bathroom. So the little invisible creatures that otherwise, you know, the bad spirits won't get us.
Yeah. And but germs do exist.
I mean, of course they do. Yeah. But the point is, have you ever seen a germ?
Right.
No.
Well, no, but there's evidence, there's empirical evidence for bacteria and things like that. I mean, the funny thing is before you take a piss, actually what you should really do is wash your hands before you touch your dick.
Mm-hmm.
Your dick is in your pants. Your hands are out and all dirty and you've been shaking hands and stuff. So in fact, what you should do is actually, it's a reverse. Wash your hands and then touch your willy that's been safely in your cotton trousers, you know? I mean,
that is, by the way, one of the more interesting things. It turns out that cheap cotton textiles may have been one of the major causes of disease reduction throughout the West. Because before, people would wear the same dirty undergarments again and again and again. And suddenly when
delicious. Jesus. I can't imagine living in the... They said that in the Middle Ages in London, if you walk down the street, people used to have to hold perfumed handkerchiefs to handkerchiefs to their noses.
Yeah.
And you wore wigs and people didn't bathe.
Oh, yeah.
And Shogun, I think that there's a, remember when he sleeps with this Japanese woman and the Japanese were so clean.
Mm-hmm.
Like everything was clean. They would bathe every day. And this is in, you know, in the Middle Ages, whatever it was. And probably in the 1700s when the Portuguese actually came to, you know, I don't know the exact dates. And one of the things he remembers is, like how clean this woman was when he's having sex with her and his European wife, and she'd take her clothes off and the hair and the smell because she never cleaned herself.
Yeah.
It's just overwhelming. And it was just such a huge difference.
Yeah.
God damn, I'm turned on.
By which, the dirty European wife or the clean Japanese wife?
Both. I haven't changed my underwear in weeks. This is killing me. I think I have bees down there. What are those things anyway? God, my skin is crawling. They must be bed bugs. It's fine. Let's keep going. Anybody have any Lysol or bug spray?
Brian, I mean, you know, there's been a real sort of interest in like these fancy honeys that are made with like, you know, clover honey or lavender honey. What about Brian's pants honey?
Well, especially since I fuck honey. Maybe that's the problem. I don't know what it is. Our guest is not Ben Goldacre, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest is not Dr. Ben Goldacre.
Yeah, but by the power of podcasting, we can totally say he's in the studio, but he has a sore throat. So he's just going to whisper everything in Brian's ear and then Brian will relay it.
Exactly. I'm looking forward to reading Bad Science, though. It's about the food supplement industry.
Should we dub this podcast episode? You know, should we title it like the episode with not Ben Goldacre?
Yeah, exactly. He said that one of the central things in my book, Bad Science, is that there's no real difference between the $600 billion pharmaceutical industry and the $50 billion food supplement pill industry. That's hilarious.
I wonder, you've read the book much more closely than I have. What's the, are the standards for the food supplement industry as rigorous as the FDA is for?
Not at all.
Yeah, exactly.
In fact, there are no standards.
Yeah.
There are certain independent rating agencies that are hard to get if they put a certain stamp on your protein powder. I mean, mm-hmm. they've done the thing. The thing is, they've done studies on different protein powders and stuff, and most people are actually using real whey protein and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know about a lot of the other stuff. I mean, you know, olive leaf extract a friend of mine is taking for her immune system. I was like, oh, so now it's not olive oil, it's olive leaf oil extract.
Oh my God.
Like, what are you doing, man? Who told you this horse shit? Somebody who's a healer, somebody who's got their degree in alternative medicine.
In energy therapy.
Yeah, a homeopathic doctor. Look up what real homeopathy is. It's not, there's no medicine in it.
Yeah.
There's no medicine. It's
well, I mean, you know, the thing is that some of that stuff does turn out to have benefits. I mean, you know.
Well, placebo effect.
Well, there's placebo effect, but there's also the fact that, you know, most of these drug companies, all they're doing is they're taking chemicals from plants.
Right.
And just, you know, making highly intense versions
sure.
of them or tweaking it or whatever. I mean,
saw
you know.
Palmetto bark.
Yeah.
Is for you take for the losing your hair. Saw palmetto bark has finasteride in it. Propecia just took finasteride and basically isolated it. And so you take the real Propecia.
That's right.
You want to take the whole bark. I don't know what else is in the bark. Donut. You know, eat an orange. I can understand eating an orange for vitamin C instead of taking ascorbic acid. That makes sense. But you just got
to
be careful.
But why does that make sense to you as opposed to, you know, just chewing on a tasty piece of saw palmetto bark?
You're right. You got to start growing some saw palmetto bark trees. You got to look at what works. My buddy, I play tennis with a guy twice a week, and he's an open level tennis player. He plays 8 hours a day, and he doesn't get tired, doesn't get injured. And he plays hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that's incredible
yeah.
when you can play that long. And I said, what do you do? And he goes, I don't know, dude. I just, you know, I eat well. And I said, what are you eating? He goes, I think the biggest secret is goji berries. Now, if I see a guy like that playing tennis for 8 hours a day and he eats goji berries, I'm eating goji berries. Because to me, I go, something's working with this guy.
Yeah,
like
absolutely.
That, he's my age and he's able to play tennis on that level that many hours a day without breaking down every day.
Yeah.
Maybe there's something about those Tibetan goji berries that the dude grows in his backyard. I'm going to do that.
He grows them in his backyard?
Yeah. And he says, when I don't eat them, I notice a difference. Okay.
Sure.
That to me sounds empirical. That sounds to me like I'm going to go with the guy who can play that long, who swears by goji berries. I'll try it.
But even so, even if it's not, I mean, it's not really empirical, but even if it's just a little religion that you buy into and it makes you happier
yeah.
and it's not doing any harm.
We do know. I mean, there is science. There is real science. There is real empirical evidence and data to suggest that if you eat a certain way, you will be healthier, have more endurance, and have more strength than if you eat another way. I mean, food is a drug. We do have, I mean, just take a look at athletes who pay attention to this stuff and their coaches. You know, Mike Dolce, who trains all the top fighters. You know, he just got Fighter of the Year at the MMA Awards. Mike Dolce is a guy who works with athletes in real time and has spent a great deal of time with his own body. If you look at the guy, he's not just a trainer. He's built like a brick shite house. Mm-hmm. And he trains and fights and does all of it himself. But this is a guy who's dedicated his entire life to what works in the body, what kinds of foods make a difference. That's a guy to listen to.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a guy to listen to.
Yeah.
Now, he may have, I don't know, I mean, I don't want to speak for Mike, but, you know, guys like that sometimes can have, they might say something like, eat some maca powder, and, you know, well, all right, I don't know.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I think that's the dangerous stuff with all of this stuff. I mean, obviously, you're a huge fan of Jenny McCarthy, and you know her stance on vaccination.
I don't blame. Look, and I don't. And I read a book called Denialism about similar to what Bad Science is about. And Jenny McCarthy features prominently in his book. I don't blame Jenny McCarthy. Was a an actress who and I use that term loosely, but I don't know Jenny. I've met her once, but I know her ex-husband a little bit, and from all accounts from people I know, she's a cool girl. She's
yeah, I'm
a
sure.
cool person. Jenny McCarthy had two sick children. As a mother, I'm not going to blame Jenny McCarthy for doing whatever she had to make sure those children, to finding the answer. That's what a mother does. And Jenny McCarthy is a proactive person who used her celebrity and somehow came across this guy who was a sociopath, but his name is Wakefield. He's clearly a bad guy. His name is Wakefield. And he's a British physician who did studies that suggested that it's Andrew Wakefield.
Yeah.
And he did studies that apparently proved, quote unquote, that vaccinations cause autism. He never was able to replicate those studies. And it turns out he's a fraud and he lost his license. He still goes around and talks to people. He's tall. He's got an English accent.
Well, and
he just sounds very, very authoritative. He's a sociopath. He's
yeah, and so much of it is that, you know, him losing his license feeds into the narrative that he's creating. You
right.
know, I went and told the truth and they didn't like the truth. And so now they've taken away my license.
Of course. And if you believe, and my thing is, I don't blame people. I don't blame Jenny McCarthy. Jenny McCarthy was doing whatever she could. She's not a scientist. You know, she's like, my university is the University of Google. And, you know, she would shout and scream and you're full of shit. And she'd yell at doctors.
Yeah.
And she had these doctors behind her. So Jenny thought she was doing something that was good and actually exposing a truth. She was wrong. And I think she's come around to the fact that, you know, first of all, kids apparently don't have autism. And so it's been a big thing now, you know, and she's come clean on that. I haven't followed it very closely, but if you follow Jenny McCarthy's advice, if you read that book, and I understand that you were desperate and you had a child that was sick, and I've never experienced that, but I have children and I can imagine. That's why I have a lot of sympathy for people like Jenny McCarthy and even the people that, you know, that were doing whatever they could to figure out. They were trying to find an enemy. They were trying to find an enemy and trying to find somebody to blame for their child's autism. I get it. I'd be the same goddamn way. But doesn't excuse the fact that you didn't go the scientific route.
Mm-hmm.
It what you did was you trusted a bunch of people who were full of shit, who did not do real peer-reviewed science, who did not do double-blind studies, who could not replicate their findings. And in fact, what it did was put a lot of other children at risk because all these kids, especially in California, especially in Marina del Rey, et cetera, stopped getting vaccinated. And so children lost their what's called herd immunity. And a lot of kids were put at risk for the measles and kids were getting the measles and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I have a problem because you're putting my child at risk.
Yeah. And
your unorthodox beliefs that are not grounded in science are putting my child at risk. That's where I have a problem. That's where it hurts me. That's where your ignorance is creeping into my life.
Yeah. Well, and that's the interesting thing, though, is that, you know, I think this really gets down to what is the social compact? Because obviously, you know, you have the choice to not vaccinate your children.
And not anymore. Thank God the sense, common sense came into play. And now if you want to be part of a preschool or a kindergarten nowadays, I think especially in my daughter's thing, it's not an option, dude.
Yeah.
You're getting your kids getting vaccinated or they're not coming to school. And
right.
I think that's a good policy.
Right.
You know.
But that's the point, is that that's the compact that you set up. That's the agreement you set up, and you know, you either buy into it or you don't.
Yeah.
And if
homeschool your kid, go ahead. But you know, good luck.
Yeah.
So again, we come back to the fact that science is king.
Yeah, science, so, I mean, that's the point. It's a method for actually, it's so easy. I mean, the danger of the human brain, like the human brain is amazing at creating alternate realities, you know? I mean, that's so much of what we have on here is that we talk to people and they're like, okay, there's this alternate reality, right? You know, people understand, oh, they make sense of the entire world through the lens of racism, the entire history. And then you have Jared Diamond who writes Guns, Germs, and Steel, and you're like, oh, that explanation of the world doesn't actually make much sense. But, you know, that's the thing is that they're, I mean, what blew me away with The Singularity Is Near, why I love that book so much is because you have this, it's not to say that The Singularity Is Near is right or wrong. I'm not really in a position to evaluate it. But the fact that you have been living in a sort of understanding of the future, and then he presents this whole flipped up, you know, and suddenly you're like, oh my God.
I mean, it literally changes. I mean, that's, they've, it's, he's created a new religion.
He has.
Kurzweilists. You
yeah.
know, the idea that, you know, when they can.
Singularitarians.
When they can download your brain and your essence, what does that say about mortality?
Well, and it's fascinating as well because if you look at that community, there's really the spectrum of believers, right?
Yeah.
There are people who are fairly calm and rational about the whole thing, but there are some people out there who are rabid. I once went on a forum where people were talking about this stuff, and it's, and you know, they were talking about, because you know, there's a, you know, should you be allowed to really do whatever you want, modify your biology in any way, you know, and so there were these people who were out there and they were like, any meat bag, which is how they refer to people who are still biologically human, who tries to get in the way of me transcending my biology is going to pay.
Any meatbag. Any meatbag.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
And that's what happens because it becomes dogma.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes, you know, the new truth. And you're in the way. You're the enemy if you're not going to be, you know, available to all this work that's been done to get you immortal.
Well, that's the point. And it really, it does have that, there is this sort of, it has all of that sort of apocalyptic religious, you know, revelations. I mean, there's a date, right? 2030, 2040, when we're all...
Some things don't change.
Yep.
Some things do not change. That might be the apocalypse, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I think that's what's so, you know, science is a really, really powerful tool, but I think the real danger that has always been true of scientists is, and this goes back to John Haidt, we are emotional creatures and we make our decisions emotionally. And the problem is that when you have people who really believe that their decisions and the things that they're saying are entirely rational, they become really, really, really dangerous.
Yeah.
You know? Because that's
especially
how,
especially when they're smart but they don't know a lot.
Yeah.
Especially when the very dangerous person is usually the smart guy with no education. That can be dangerous because they can create a cult of personality. They can galvanize people around symbols and slogans and half-truths and colorful language that sort of seems to make sense and allows people to, dumb people who are fanatical, to latch on to stuff.
Desperate people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the problem. That's the problem. Scientology did that. So did Christianity, for that matter. So did a lot of religions. If you take them literally, you know, you'll follow a charismatic leader.
Well, that's...
It's not, you know, this book, Going Clear, about Scientology, is this expose that I read. Look, you can criticize Scientology or anything else. I know a lot of Scientologists. There are actually certain things about the cult, the philosophy, that works. I mean, it's pretty practical. I was in this class for many years. So the Scientology is not the enemy. It's again, it's the sort of your mindset. It's the fanatical mindset that this is the truth. I found it. Everybody else is wrong. And you know, but you see that with every religion.
Yeah.
You see that with everything.
Well, and you find that with political philosophies. You find that with
God,
everything.
Oh my God!
Do you ever?
Exactly. I mean, you find out hardcore Democrats and hardcore Republicans.
Well, and I think that's the thing that people don't realize is that there are many, many religions that are celebrated outside of churches and synagogues mosques, you know? I mean, I think that's the thing. We're very, very religious creatures, and we band together in these little groups, you know, that are internally cohesive. And there are, you know,
if you go to the Third Street Promenade, take a look at the Apple Store. It's built like a cathedral.
It is a cathedral.
Apple, the Apple symbol is right above you. And you walk into this huge dome. It's literally,
it's a cathedral.
It's a cathedral.
Yeah.
And that is your religion.
And the God lives on.
God help you. I switched to Android. God help me, apparently, because I got an iMac, a Mac, and I got an iPad.
Yeah.
And my friends who saw me switch to, you know, my Galaxy Samsung, forget it. It's a better phone. Better phone. But I was, you know, I mean, ostracized. You loser. What are you doing? You know, Mac people and PC people are, it's even that.
Two cults.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But I think the answer is always just to be aware of that, you know, and that's what can so often get lost in science and all that sort of stuff is, you know, I mean, they're because you do have so much truth and so much evidence on your side, and this is what Haidt was saying about, you know, the people who use those certainty words the most are Fox News anchors and the new atheists. You know, it's like people like Dawkins who are there and they're like, this is the truth and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And besides, you know, not being what science is about, it's an incredibly unappealing characteristic in a human being.
It is. Well, atheists, a lot of atheists, and they can be very smart. They have their own fundamentalism.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're wired that way.
Well, I think that's the thing. It's like all of these things. We have that possibility and the propensity.
But you know, when I read these books and we have these people on, the one thing I'm always struck by is I had one idea of what the truth was, and then I'm usually, my mind has changed.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to, there are certain truths you should stick to, you know, principles and, you know, your ethics and your morals and things. I mean, I know the difference between right and wrong. The thing about this book is
Do you know the difference between right and wrong, Brian?
I do indeed.
I mean, that is a serious question.
I do know the difference. For example, in this book, you can tell me how complicated it is to get a drug passed, but if you're telling me, if you are saying to people that this drug is safe and works very well 80% of the time, but your tests show that it actually works 20% of the time on a certain group of people, Asian men in their 50s, you're lying. You're fucking lying. And I have a problem with that. And there are certain things you can't fool me about. I'm going to look at you and go, that's a lie. It's a very fancy lie, but it's a lie. You are cherry-picking data. And you are hiding unflattering data. And you have rigged the system that way so you can sell more drugs. If, by the way, your patent's running out and you then take the you reconstitute the drug. It's the same drug, but you're using the other molecule, whatever it is. I can't remember how he talks about that. It's called the Me Too drugs. What they'll do is if their patent's running out, they'll just create a very similar, they'll restructure the molecule, but it does exactly the same thing, and they'll charge 40% more for it. It's the same drug. And claim that it might be more effective or it's just the new drug. And they have this slick marketing campaign around it, warning you against the generic drugs because you never know. But this is our new drug. You're being dishonest. You're paying your mortgage and you're building your pool and sending your kids to school on, I believe, something that is ultimately unethical and dishonest. You're charging people 40% more to the point where Medicaid, the head of Medicaid and people like that kind of go, wait a minute, this is the same drug. You guys are charging more and we're having to pay for it.
Well, it's and unethical. look at Bush's prescription drug plan. Part of what that said was is that, you know, the Medicaid is not allowed to do bulk deals, which is nuts.
Right.
Because obviously if you're buying in the kind of volumes that they're buying in, you can get a really good deal.
Yeah.
Right? And they're also not allowed to buy from Canada when they might be able to buy them for cheaper from Canada. And, you know.
Incredible.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. But, you know, I think that's the thing is that it's, I would agree, like on certain issues, yes, right and wrong is clear. But I think part of it is that with a lot of this stuff, I mean, if you look at, say, you know, the pharmaceutical industry, you know, there are often choices. If you have a lot of tests and hurdles that are required to pass drugs, well, that's going to prevent people from dying from complications from those drugs. But, you know, do potentially more people die because you don't find good drugs that could save their lives?
Of course, you can couch these things and developing drugs, and you're going to make mistakes.
Yeah.
But here's how our society works, and this is how our laws are supposed to work, and this is how a society is supposed to be structured. Don't take what doesn't belong to you. Keep your promises, and if you break those two, make amends. Mm-hmm. Do something to put things back into place. If you don't have those three principles, don't take what doesn't belong to you, keep your promises, and if you break those two laws, then you have to do something to make it right. If you don't have a society based on that, and if it's not enforced by objective law, a system of courts and representation, then you don't have a society. Then what you have is Iraq. Then what mm-hmm. you have is all these countries where there is no justice, where there is no real private property because you never know who's going to take it away from you because they have influence, they have money, and they have guns. That is not how a society can work. It's certainly not what makes this country great. The latter is what
or
makes
any
this country great.
You know what I mean? That's
yeah.
I mean,
people have to feel like their hard work and their honest work and their risk and their ingenuity is going to be rewarded and protected.
Yeah, I mean, that's the point. And you read books like Why Nations Fail, you read any of those books, or actually Bernstein's books, you know, The Birth of Plenty, mm-hmm. you know, property rights, I mean, all of that stuff.
Hugely important.
Yeah, exactly.
Property rights are hugely important. I mean, it's it's why the American housing market up until recently, and is still... it's back, is a very, very safe investment for countries.
Well, for countries, but actually one of the interesting things in Friedman's book, The Next 100 Years, he talks about how as the boomers start retiring and they start selling off all of their houses, there may actually be a real surplus of housing in the United States.
Good.
And so what's that going to do to housing prices?
They're going to plummet, right?
Probably. Yeah. So, you know, that's...
Well, right now, I'm waiting. I mean, trying to buy a house now is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. Who has this money? I make money.
Our fans have this money.
Dude,
that's why we're going to do a Kickstarter
right.
for Brian to buy.
I make money. I make a lot of money compared to most Americans, and I can't afford a house in California. I mean, it's expensive.
Well,
who in the hell is able to do this?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, you're in California, you know,
yeah.
and without, you know, the federal government subsidizing insurance prices, you know, what sane person could live here? I mean, look at forest fires, look at earthquakes, look at, you know, I mean, we're in a drought right now. Have you felt that drought?
No.
No. I mean, it's an insane place to live. Like,
yeah.
you know, how many people should be living here?
Yeah.
You know.
Not many.
Three Indians.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so, I mean.
And by Indians, he means
Native Americans. No, I actually mean people of the subcontinent.
Wow.
Three Brahmins.
Three Brahmins who are priests.
Yeah, in the desert. But the other thing is, too, is that in general, you know, if you look at our parents' generation, you know, they all owned houses by this age.
Yep.
And it wasn't because they were such brilliant financial wizards.
It's true.
Yeah.
It's really true. That just made me cough. I don't know why. My parents. ladies and gentlemen, we're going to sign off here. And unless you have anything else to add, Hunter. I want to thank Dr. Ben
Goldacre for
not being here. And I'm glad I woke up that early. I'm tired. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we'll get him back on. And
back on?
You,
we'll get him on.
We'll get him on.
At some point.
Yeah, we'll get him on. But looking forward to that, and we'll talk to you later. Oh, and by the way, real quick, I'll be in New York at Gotham Comedy Club, and then I'll be at the Punchline in San Francisco, February 27th, 28th, March 1st. And then I'm going to be in Minneapolis, the House of Comedy.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. I think
the
it's
Twin Cities?
Bloomfield or something like that.
Bloomington.
Yeah. Bloomington, Indiana?
No, I don't know.
No, I don't know. Anyway, it's the House of Comedy at the biggest mall in America. And that's March 6th, 7th, 8th. Something like that. Anyway, I'm going to be hilarious. I promise you. Come laugh.
Yeah, you're going to be in Bloomington, Minnesota.
Bloomington, Minnesota.
Yeah, and then MN is Minnesota? Yes.
Yep.
True statement. Okay.
Yep.
Edmonton. You're going to be in Edmonton.
Canada.
In May.
That's where I sell out. I sell out.
You sell out everywhere, Brian. Don't be modest.
So far, it's been good.
Yeah.
All right, kids. Thanks for this podcast. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to The Brian Callen Show with Brian Callen. Be sure to like him on Facebook. Just search for Brian Callen Comedy. And follow him on Twitter. Just search for @BrianCallen. You can also find him online by visiting his website. Just go to briancallen.com. Until next time, bye-bye.